for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Julie Andrews' six-decade career in entertainment is legendary, encompassing stage, screen, and television. She's also a prolific writer, along with her daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton. She's co-authored 17 children's books. Their latest literary collaboration, an anthology of more than 100 of their favorite poems and song lyrics. The book includes both classics and modern favorites, plus a few they've written themselves. The book is titled Julie Andrews' Collection of Poems, Songs, and Lullabies. And can you believe how lucky I am to have both Julie Andrews and her daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton, here in the studio with me? How wonderful
Thank
to
you,
see you
Diane.
Both.
It's great to see you.
And so lovely to be here.
Just wonderful to have you both here. This book, with the two of you on the cover, describe this photograph, Julie.
It was an accidental photo, I think, and
taken by my dad.
Yes, oh. Taken by Emma's dad, and I think we were on the beach, and he just shot it, and I had Emma in my arms, and we were sort of nose to nose,
and that's it, nose to nose,
and it's a photo position we find we've repeated over the years.
I'll
so we've
bet
found
you
ourselves
have.
Nose to nose.
I notice you do it with your daughter sometimes.
I
too.
Do.
Do you really?
I yeah. do.
Oh, that's
son.
Great. Yeah. This anthology is the latest of many books on which you've collaborated. Talk about how that collaboration began and why, Julie.
We'll both share that story. I was asked by my publishers at about 14 years ago, if I had anything for very young children. I've been, as you know, Diane, writing for about 35 years now, but there was a kind of hiatus when a little thing called life got in the way. And so they said, do you ever write for very, very young children? And I said, I certainly could. Let me think about it. So I went to Emma and I said, Emma, she had a young son, Sam, who was how old, darling?
He was about a year.
Mm-hmm. And I said, if you had to go to the library and pick out a book that you really, really wanted for him, is there some subject that he would love? And take it from there, Emma.
Well, he was a complete truck fanatic and would just...
Trucks!
Trucks were his thing.
It's yeah, even trucks at the age or of dinosaurs. With
yeah,
kids,
yeah. Trucks
with
or
boys,
dinosaurs.
And he, you know, he just ate, slept, lived, breathed trucks and only wanted to read truck books. And I was having trouble at that time finding something that was substantive, that had character and theme and something more than just, you know, the bulldozer goes crunch kind of fare. And so I said, it's no question it would be a truck story, and it would be one that had characters, and perhaps the trucks would be anthropomorphic and would have some value, but it doesn't exist. And Mom said, well, then I guess we better write it.
Ah.
And that's how we began, and that was the Dumpy the Dump Truck series. And we just kept going. We had such a wonderful time. We didn't know that we would be compatible working together as mother-daughter. I mean, you know, that's not a given, I think.
And it certainly isn't, absolutely.
No. And we're both fairly bossy individuals, too. And so I think we thought, oh, gosh.
What will this do to our relationship? But the happy surprise is that by being creative together, by actually sort of being put in situations where we have to do nothing else but focus on creativity and creative play in the sandbox, so to speak, it eliminates so much of the other nonsense that can get in the way of family tensions. There isn't time for family drama or for, you know, complaints about one's aches and pains or anything else that might get
in
the way.
And we have very different strengths.
We do.
Yeah, I think Emma's the sort of nuts and bolts of a story. You're the all to do with the foundation and where
structure.
We're going and structure and whether it is a good ending for the first act, so to speak.
Well, you know, the last time I spoke with the two of you, you, Emma, were here in the studio, and you, Julie.
I was back in California,
you
not
were
feeling
back
well,
in
I think.
California,
yeah.
Not feeling well. Isn't that how you have collaborated on much of the work you've done by long distance.
By webcam, of all things.
By webcam.
Yes, technology is our saving grace.
And but you didn't have webcam to begin with.
We didn't. We didn't. We had telephones and very stiff necks for a long time.
Telephones, pencils, pads, and holding the phone to our shoulder and our ear. In fact, in the early days, we tried very hard to be in the same room together. But thanks to the webcam, we can still be in the same rooms together.
Isn't it
wonderful? It is amazing. It has saved our lives in that respect.
This is an eclectic mix of poetry and one, and as I said in the introduction, some of your own poetry. I am particularly fond of the two that each of you has written, and I'll bet that you can each recite them from memory.
No, not quite.
Not quite, Emma. You want to go ahead and read it for us?
You mean the ones that we wrote about our daughters?
Exactly.
Oh, how do you feel about that, Mom?
I have to ask you how you feel, because it's a slightly slightly personal story.
Well, it's okay with me if no one can see me blushing
right
on the air.
So, go ahead.
We challenged each other. Actually, I should preface this by saying we have a great tradition in our family of writing poems as gifts for one another and using poetry to commemorate special occasions and important transitions and so forth. And so we summoned our courage and said, shall we dare to include a few of our own poems, because we're in such extremely esteemed company in this book. It was, we felt a little bit
gorgeous
preposterous
poetry
to be sharing our own. But we decided we would be brave and share a few, and then we thought perhaps we would write one each just for this collection. And we chose the theme of parenthood. And funnily enough, as so often happens when we work together, we ended up writing about the same thing, which was our daughters. And so I wrote about my daughter, and my mother wrote about me, although you have several daughters.
I think one of the things that gave us courage to include a couple of our poems in the book is the fact that there's a poem by my father in the book, by Emma's dad in the book, and also by my grandfather, which was a great find just as we were beginning to compile all these poems. And so it makes it very personal for us, and it's a great joy to be able to publish those two poems particularly.
I want to hear those two.
Right. Well, this is a poem dedicated to my daughter, Hope, who is 6 and who gets terribly upset when I read this aloud. So forgive me, Hopey, if you're listening, even though it's actually a tribute. And it's called Our Lady of Perpetual Demand. I want, I want, I want, you say. When can I have it? When? Another day it's no, I won't. And no, 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 again. I sigh. I ask for manners. Counter, I don't want to hear it. But in my heart, I celebrate your dazzling strength of spirit.
How wonderful. How wonderful.
You. She's a very special
She's a feisty little girl.
Yes.
Strong.
How old is she now?
She's 6.
Ah.
Yeah, and she's
well,
a strong
hope, I
girl.
Well, I hope you're listening.
This is a true story about my M here, and apologies to you, M. And it's called Observation. Sweet, beloved daughter of mine, I recall when you were merely 9, I passed your room one sunny day and saw you caught in the mirror's sway. You happily turned this way and that and cupped your chest, which was seriously flat. In profile, you murmured the priceless line, ha, you said, coming along just fine.
Wonderful.
That's a true story.
How wonderful.
Actually, one of the things I think that also gave us the courage to include our own poetry is that we would love for families and children to be inspired to write their own and try their own hands at poetry, and not just, falling in love with other people's poetry, but perhaps also putting pen to paper and having the courage to do it themselves.
Poetry was part of your growing up.
And mine, too.
And yours.
Yes, my father loved poems.
He loved
them. Yeah, and he committed them to memory a great deal of the time, so that if he was on a walk down a country lane or something, he would just conjure up a favorite that he wanted to, if he was feeling a little, he was never lonely because he always had a poem in his pocket, which is a poem,
title of one of the poems,
title
in
of one
book.
Of the poems in the book. Yeah,
you
yeah.
both have come from broken homes, so that poetry became really essential.
It did, and it's also it can help so much. It can change your perspective. It can give you a moment of comfort. It can make you laugh. It's hugely important because it's short but succinct and hopefully
and satisfying
and hits that spot that says, oh, I know how that person felt. Or,
how old were you when your family broke up?
I think probably I was about three or four when my mother separated from my dad, whom I absolutely adored. And she married my stepfather. My stepfather taught me to sing, but I was never very close to him because, of course, I adored my real father and so wanted to be with him.
Did you stay close to him?
Yes, I certainly did. Oh, my goodness.
He taught both of us to read, actually, my mom's dad. He was a teacher. A gentle, humble, country...
Nature-loving man,
yes. But also a teacher. And he taught my mom to read and many years later taught me to read. So he continues to be a great source of inspiration to both of us. And
a lot of the poems in this book are poems that he shared with me. And then, of course, in later years, I shared them with Emma.
Julie Andrews and her daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton, their newest book, collection of poems, songs, and lullabies. We'll be opening the phones very soon. Stay with us. And if you've just joined us, I'm sure you recognize the voice of Julie Andrews, an acclaimed singer and actress. She's author of many children's books, a recent memoir titled Home. Her daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton, is also here in the studio, and she is also a children's book author, editor, arts educator, and theater professional. Her latest book is titled Raising Bookworms. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. As you've said, you've included some real classics here. One of them, by A.A. Milne, is The King's Breakfast. Would you read that for us?
We would be delighted. It's one of our favorites, and probably the very first choice we made when we sat down to begin compiling this
really?
Collection. Yes, because it is a family favorite and a poem that my grandfather used to read to Mom, and Mom used to read to me, and I now read to my kids.
Would that have been at bedtime? Would it have been
actually
at story
anytime? Time? Story time. Anytime. That's the wonderful thing about poetry. I mean, it's wonderful at bedtime. It's wonderful at breakfast.
Right.
It's wonderful at all times of the day. And it's just this particular one is just such fun.
And it has a wonderful rhythm to it.
Absolutely.
And it's, of course, A.A. Milne, who wrote the wonderful Winnie the Pooh series and has dozens of extraordinary poems. And there are a few others of his in here, but this is our particular favorite.
I'll start. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The king asked the queen, and the queen asked the dairymaid,
"Could we have some butter for the royal slice of bread?"
The queen asked the dairymaid. The dairymaid said,
"Certainly, I'll go and tell the cow now before she goes to bed."
The dairymaid, she curtsied and went and told the Alderney,
"Don't forget the butter for the royal slice of bread."
The Alderney said sleepily,
"You'd better tell His Majesty that many people nowadays like marmalade instead."
The dairymaid said,
"Fancy!"
and went to Her Majesty. She curtsied to the Queen and she turned a little red.
"Excuse me, Your Majesty, for taking of the liberty, but marmalade is tasty if it's very thickly spread."
The Queen said,
"Oh!"
and went to His Majesty.
"Talking of the butter for the royal slice of bread, many people think that marmalade is nicer. Would you like to try a little marmalade instead?"
The king said,
"Bother."
And then he said,
"Oh, dear me."
The king sobbed,
"Oh, deary me."
And went back to bed.
"Nobody,"
he whimpered,
"could call me a fussy man. I only want a little bit of butter for my bread."
The queen said,
"There, there,"
and went to the dairymaid. The dairymaid said,
"There, there,"
and went to the shed. The cow said,
"There, there, I didn't really mean it. Here's milk for his porringer and butter for his bread."
The queen took the butter and brought it to His Majesty. The king said,
"Butter, eh?"
and bounced out of bed.
"Nobody,"
he said as he kissed her tenderly.
"Nobody,"
he said as he slid down the banisters.
"Nobody, my darling, could call me a fussy man. But I do like a little bit of butter to my bread."
Oh, brother. Really? How wonderful.
It's such a sweet poem, isn't it?
It's darling.
Yeah. Brings out the ham in both of us.
And of course, the way the two of you do this together.
Well,
the illustrations as well. There is the king.
There
here
he is.
On his throne.
Yes.
Just longing for a bit of butter with
and
his
and a slide
bread.
Down the banister.
And a slide. That's what we adore, is the thought of a king sliding down the banister.
Well, the illustrations, as you say, Diane, this is the wonderful James McMullen, who many people know as the poster artist for Lincoln Center Theater. I mean, his posters have graced most of Lincoln Center's productions over the years and are just dazzling. But he's also an accomplished children's book illustrator in partnership with his wife, Kate, and they do the I Stink series, of that other truck series, which we love.
But he literally, once we had laid out the ideas for the poems, he took them one by one in order so that he would not paint three dark pictures and find that they were lumped together. And he really tried to feel the meaning of each poem that he saw. So every day he'd choose the next one and then the next one.
And, of course, sometimes there is more than one poem to a page, and he had to come up with an image that unified all of the various ideas and thoughts on a page. So it's
and
really an extraordinary
just
accomplishment.
Just wonderful. Julie, you and I share voice problems.
We do.
Tell me what's happening with yours.
Well, Diane, nothing much, alas. I wish I could. Happily, my speaking voice is still intact, but the singing voice is pretty short, I'm afraid, and there's not that much hope that I will. I've got about 5 bass notes, so I could sing the heck out of Old Man River or something like that.
Right.
But other than that, I don't sing. But I was really in mourning, and have been, and still am, really, about it. But Emma said one day, "Mom, you've just found another way of using your voice with these books." And I must say that expression put everything into perspective.
How lovely
for me.
Hear that from your daughter.
It was. And I thought, yes, we, and also it's very important for us to package our books with as much texture in every way, to package it with a CD, to have the quality of the paper, to have the art as lovely as it is. And we've been really fortunate, haven't we, Emma?
We have. Yeah. Our new publisher, Little Brown, has really done the most exquisite job in putting this book together. And they allowed us to include a CD with some of the selections on the CD and some original music by Ian Fraser, who often we work with.
Julie, there was some talk of experimental surgery.
Yes. I have to say there's a phenomenal surgeon in Boston, a gentleman called Dr. Stephen Zeitels, and he is probably certainly one of the foremost people in the world to do throat voice research, voice rehabilitation. And he is working on what we call the stuff, and it is something that you can use for people who've had cancer problems with their throats, who orators who have very tired voices. It's a number of years away, I believe, from being something that I could embrace, and that would be useful for me. And it may not happen, but it certainly is going to happen one day. And I endorse it wholeheartedly and speak for it when I can.
Of course, Dr. Zeitels also has used Botox for my spasmodic dysphonia. He is not my particular doctor, but
you know
him often. I know of him enormously. But you did sing in one of your recent movies.
Well, you know, I wouldn't call it singing.
I would.
That's so lovely of you. I'd call it a sort of sing-speak. As I say, there's about five low notes that I can manage. It's not what I would call singing, but it is a joy to still have that, at least.
Did you go through depression?
Yes, very
massive.
Much so. Mm-hmm. Huge. And I miss it. Something quite wonderful happened last year. One of our books, which is called Simeon's Gift, Simeons, is about a traveling minstrel in the Middle Ages. And it was suggested, to cut a very long story short, that we try to have it orchestrated for symphony orchestra and that I narrate the story. And out of that came not just orchestrations, but also songs, and it's performed by five wonderful performers. And last year, I was able to do that with a symphony. And in fact, again, touch on those very, very low notes. It was the most extraordinary joy for me to do that. And to have one of our books realized in such a way was, miraculous in a way, wasn't it, Emma?
It was. It was deeply moving.
Yeah, and we're going to probably be traveling with it
next
year.
Oh, how wonderful.
Probably in Europe to start with, but we hope to bring it back again
to
the States.
So what you have done is to use work, the music of poetry, the idea of language spoken in a different way to help you get through this.
That's right. And I don't think I would have enjoyed the writing experience with Emma. It certainly wouldn't have been as detailed or as much.
If you were still singing.
If I was still singing. And
really?
So in a way,
isn't
one door closed and the window opened,
yeah,
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
One of the things that's wonderful, too, about the poetry book is that I specifically said, if we're going to do an anthology, let's use some of the songs that I've so enjoyed over my career, because the lyrics of the songs that I choose to sing are beautiful poems in themselves. And happily, there are many of them in the book. We couldn't afford all of them because it was a fairly hefty budget when all is said and done, but there are some lovely, beautiful lyrics in the book.
There is a sense of humor about aging in this book. And you have a version of My Favorite Things.
I do.
Which you read at the Radio Music Hall to commemorate your 69th
actually,
birthday.
Diane, I have to say, believe it or not, I never did that.
You never
no,
did that?
No, it's been all over the internet. And
and you never did
and
it?
And I never did it.
Well,
and
will you do it for us now?
Well, no, because what is it called when you take a lyric? An adaptation. It was a sort of bastardized version of My Favorite Things
right.
with some very odd connotations
yes.
to it, and I don't have it, and it. I don't think I would. I certainly wouldn't have done it because Rodgers and Hammerstein's lyrics are so beautiful, and I revere them and the gift that they gave me, and they were giants in my life, and so I don't think I would have done that kind of thing to them. And I certainly wasn't at Radio City Music Hall for my 60th birthday. Isn't that strange that it got to be such
How
a big
weird?
I know.
How
I know.
Weird, but such things do happen.
I don't know how they grow but they, become fact, but there you are.
In any event, you have really focused on optimism in this book. Optimism not only for children, but for all of us, no matter what our ages. And that's what I love so much about this book. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Julie and Emma, we have a great many callers. Let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. First, let's go to Wichita, Kansas. Good morning, Bradley. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
It is wonderful to hear all three of you discuss poetry and the lives that you are sharing with us, especially for a young man of 30 years myself to listen to people that came before me and are still here that inspire us to better ourselves and find things to be passionate about. It's really wonderful every day.
Thank
I'm
you.
So glad.
Yes. And I was inspired to grab this book off my shelf. The last time I had this book in my hand was approximately 3 years ago, following the death of an aunt. And it was a tough day for my wife and I, dealing with our emotions. We have two young children. At the time, the youngest was not, nearly old enough to understand the gravity of things. And we were just trying to keep on a good face. And, I walked into the house, and it was an emotional time, and I grabbed this book off the shelf, which I received from my grandmother upon her passing. And there's a poem in here called Whiskey Frisky. And this book was printed, it looks like, in 1947. The illustrator is Ninon, N-I-N-O-N, and it was published by Westminster Press out of Philadelphia back then.
Wow.
There's a poem from William Blake at the beginning, but I read Whiskey Frisky to the kids at that time, and through all my tears, which started to shed as I read it to them, we all just began laughing because it's such a wonderful piece of
poem. Oh, that's great. Whiskey Frisky. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I have not. Have you
interesting.
Ever?
Well,
I confess I haven't either, but it's interesting that Bradley brings up the power of poetry to restore our equilibrium and our perspective and to bring a smile to our faces or to lighten our hearts a little bit, because I really think that is the great gift of poetry. It just, in such a small moment of time can turn our perspective around completely.
And as our perspective comes close to Thanksgiving, on page 151, the turkey shot out of the oven.
By Jack Prelutsky.
The wondrous Jack Prelutsky.
Yes, and this is a perfect poem for Thanksgiving, as it's so close to us. Shall I read it, Emma?
Yes.
Okay. It is called The Turkey Shot Out of the Oven. The turkey shot out of the oven and rocketed into the air. It knocked every plate off the table and partly demolished a chair. It ricocheted into a corner and burst with a deafening boom, then splattered all over the kitchen, completely obscuring the room. It stuck to the walls and the windows. It totally coated the floor. There was turkey attached to the ceiling, where there'd never been turkey before. It blanketed every appliance. It smeared every saucer and bowl. There wasn't a way I could stop it. That turkey was out of control. I scraped and I scrubbed with displeasure and thought with chagrin as I mopped that I'd never again stuff a turkey with popcorn that hadn't been popped. Isn't that just great?
It's just a wonderful image.
Well, I mean, to call a poem the turkey shot out of the oven, it just put me away. It makes me smile. You just...
Well, exactly.
The title.
And again, that illustration of that turkey flying
shooting, careening through the room.
Flying across the kitchen.
Do you know, Diane, we had the good fortune to visit Scott Montgomery Elementary yesterday and read this poem there, and it was a treat.
They loved
the
it.
Kids. Yes. Yeah, listen to it.
Julie Andrews and her daughter Emma Walton Hamilton. Their new collaboration is titled Julie Andrews' Collection of Poems, Songs, and Lullabies. When we come back, more of your calls, questions. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, China expert Orville Schell.
This is something I think that many Americans don't yet realize. They imagine, well, we don't need China. You know, why are they taking our jobs? Let's just throw up some protectionism and we'll go our own way. Not possible any longer.
Our relationship with China on the next Fresh Air.
And as Julie Andrews and her daughter Emma Walton Hamilton are with me, they're talking about a new collection of poems, songs, and lullabies. Their photograph is on the front of the book, along with gorgeous drawings, paintings by James McMullen. But this photograph of Julie with Emma when Emma was quite young. How old were you then?
Less than a year. Yeah.
Now, here's an email, and I'd like your reaction. This is from Ricardo. He says, Julie Andrews was and is always a fresh breath of air. Oh. Just hearing her voice reminds me of better times. Thank you for your legacy of positive and creative fun. I only wish there was more of people like you in children's lives now, rather than 3D animations, action-packed video games and such. Your reaction?
Well, thank you so much for those lovely words. They made my day. I think he has a point. Video games, the internet, they all have their place, but if it replaces the joy of reading, that's not good. And it is so important that children be read to, that we share with them the wonder of poems and stories and family histories and things like that. Emma, you can address this too. You've done so much research in your wonderful book, Raising Bookworms, about what, if you read at an early age, what it can do for you in later life.
It's so critical. It has everything to do with our future success as adults and as individuals, not just as children and students at school and so forth, but being readers and accessing great books and great thinkers and great ideas and language and imagery makes us much more effective communicators and problem solvers and creative thinkers ourselves. And so I think it really is so important that we continue to look for those ways to be creative with our children and with our families. Reading aloud together is one of the best ways to do that.
This book is a collection, as we said, of poems, songs, and lullabies. There's a lovely lullaby, Lyrics and Music by Stephen Sondheim. Would you read that for us, Emma?
I would be delighted. And it's not actually, it wasn't written, intended to be a lullaby, I don't believe. This is a song from Stephen Sondheim's extraordinary musical, Sweeney Todd. And in context, it's a very different piece of writing, but it is such a beautiful song. And for us, when we were talking about lullabies, we had a dialogue about how we felt that lullabies and what we share with our children at bedtime really should provide hope. Mm-hmm. You know, Rockabye Baby
doesn't do it for me.
It has quite a dark side to it. And I think, you know, it's so important for children to go to sleep with a thought of hope and of optimism, as you say, Diane, in their hearts, to carry them through the dark night and to wake with in the morning. So this this song, which is called Not While I'm Around, says, "Nothing's gonna harm you, not while I'm around. Nothing's gonna harm you, no, sir, not while I'm around. Demons are prowling everywhere nowadays. I'll send them howling. I don't care. I've got ways. No one's going to hurt you. No one's going to dare. Others can desert you. Not to worry. Whistle. I'll be there. Demons will charm you with a smile for a while. But in time, nothing can harm you. Not while I'm around."
What a beautiful reassurance to a young
Isn't it
child.
Lovely? Yes.
True.
Or even to
me as an adult.
Yes.
I mean, I wish somebody'd read that to me at
Absolutely.
Night.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go back to the phones and to Joshua. He's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Good morning to you.
Hello, Diane. It's nice to be on the show. Thank you for taking my call.
You're most welcome.
Okay, so I had a question. My wife and I are both young, very career-oriented individuals, myself in software engineering, which isn't too creative, I guess, but she's a poet, and she just became an English professor at the University of Michigan now.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, fantastic for her. We intend at some point to have children once our careers are sort of established, and I was wondering if Julie and Emma have any advice or any tips on how to balance your career life while still sort of trying to foster creativity for children.
Good question.
Such a good question. And you know, the great challenge for all of us, I think. I mean, you know, life is very full, and the world is going faster and faster these days, and yet there really isn't anything more important ultimately than raising our children to be creative and successful and to feel safe. And so one hopes that we can prioritize and make those windows, those islands of time, as you call it, Mom.
Yes.
To share with them.
In the day, in the week, in the month, in the year.
And we can steal time from anywhere. It doesn't have to be hours and hours. It's 15 minutes before bedtime. It's during breakfast. It's reading together while the child is in the bath, or on trips, listening to audiobooks when traveling together. Those kinds of opportunities, taking advantage of time together, can make all the difference.
And I have to say that as a parent, and I love my job, my day job, and I love what I do, two things war with each other. One is that I'm always guilty when I'm away. When I was raising my children, it was always, are they all right? And as long as my antenna told me that they were in a safe and comfortable place, I could get on with my job. But then whenever I considered not doing the job that I loved and that gave me life and a feeling of joy, I thought they have to see the example as they're growing up of my loving what I do. And so hopefully it would inspire them to love what they do. One of my smaller daughters said to me one day, I said, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And she said, Mom, if you gave it up when we were grown up, we'd say, well, you were silly, weren't you, to give it all up? You missed out on a wonderful life. So I think balancing the two things, your work, hopefully you can be passionate about it and pass that passion on. And then, as Emma said, any single moment you have, keep that antenna attuned to your kids and be with them whenever you can.
Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting. I was a stay-at-home mom for about 13 years, and our daughter is a physician with a full-time career in Boston. She has two young children. And one day I said to her, Jen, honestly, I don't understand how you can do it all. And she said to me, Mom, I don't understand how you were able to stay at home for all those years.
Interesting.
So each generation has its own perspective.
And there's nothing wrong with staying at
home. Nothing wrong.
And nothing at all.
It was wonderful.
If that's what makes you safe and good and feel great about your life.
Now, I want to know about any disagreements that the two of you have had along the way. Such a project does not come without some tension somewhere.
I think that we've found that whichever one of us is the most passionate about something, we do have arguments about content or style or something that we really would like to include. And if Emma is absolutely adamant about it, I do respect her passion for that, and I will listen. And I think the same goes for Emma. If I'm passionate about something and want to keep it in, and whichever one of us sort of is the most vocal, I suppose.
Can you give me an example?
Well, mostly it occurs when we're writing original work together. If one of us has an idea about a word or a direction to go in that the other one feels strongly about, or, we can't say that because, or we must say this because. There's nothing immediately specific that pops to mind, but it's true. It's an energy. It's a reading of each other's energy. And if one of us is really passionate and able to articulate why we feel so strongly, then the other one generally respects that and backs down. And
all right.
So far it's worked.
Yeah. Well, we actually know each other so well now that it gets easier and easier.
Have you gotten to know each other better through the poetry?
Yes, and enormous respect, too, for each other, I think.
What a gift to come to know one another as adults.
Well, I was just going to say, Diane, to have a beloved daughter and then have her as a woman sitting opposite you and sharing ideas as a complete adult with you. It is such a joy for
thrilling.
Me.
Yeah, really. Thrilling. All right. To a caller here in Washington, D.C., Lauren, you're on the air.
Good morning, Diane.
Morning.
It is such an honor and pleasure to talk to you all, Emma and Julie. And I wanted to tell you that my parents' first date was to go see you in The Sound of Music.
Aww, that's
and
a nice
the family
date.
Lore is that my mother cried through the movie and my father slept through it.
There you go.
But my question is, when I listen to Emma and Julie talk, I hear unmistakable echoes of Julie's speaking voice in Emma's voice. And it makes me wonder, Emma, if you have ever done any singing or if you sing.
Oh, that's sweet of you to ask, Lauren. I'm a in the shower singer only, I'm afraid. I think they say it skips a generation, and I had a rather tough act to follow. So I'm a great admirer of singing, but not a singer myself. However, I do love to use my voice
yes.
for voiceover work and read aloud, and I do in fact do some audiobook recordings and so forth with it whenever I have the chance. So.
Well, you have a lovely speaking voice.
Thank you.
And you have a little daughter that has an incredible ability to carry
I suspect tune. My young daughter, may end up.
To carry a tune, you
oh,
say.
Yes. Both and my kids, actually, very musical. And,
really?
And have wonderful ears. And,
oh, how terrific. So.
We look forward to hearing that.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks so much for calling. Now to Dover, New Hampshire. Good morning, Susan. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Morning. What a pleasure to listen to this show.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Good morning. So many things. Hello, Julie. Hello, Emma. It's
Hello.
Wonderful to hear both of you. Julie, I've just watched you in Eloise on my Comcast and enjoyed every minute of that fun movie. Thank you so much.
I had a great time doing it, believe me.
You're so charming with your love interest. I just was absolutely fascinated to watch. I have three things for you ladies this morning. The first is beautiful conversation earlier in regards to instilling the love of poetry in children early, which my dear mother kindly did for me, which her dear mother kindly did for her. And I have a copy of two poetry books that belonged to my mom as a child, Silver Pennies and This Singing World. And
oh, how lovely.
We would read them before bed every night. And my brother would pick a poem and I would pick a poem. And it's just such a pleasure to have been able to pass that on to my children and my kindergarten students when I was a teacher.
Mm.
My second is I must take issue with the use of the language broken home. As a child of divorced people, my home didn't break. We were still okay. And I would much love if we would think about using divorced family or a separated family or something, because I think it even as a child it hurt my feelings to hear broken home.
Point well taken.
Very, very good.
Point well taken.
Thank you. And my last is a gift that you get to choose. I have three short poems I can recite. So maybe, Emma, you'd like to choose. You can hear it's an anonymous, I believe it's Middle Eastern, or you can hear an A.A. Milne, real short, or an Emily Dickinson. Up to you.
Oh, boy. Tough choice. I think I'll go with the A.A. Milne.
Very short. Very short, please.
John had great big waterproof boots on. John had great big waterproof hat on. John had a great big waterproof Macintosh on. That, said John, was that.
Yes, I know that. It's a wonderful little poem.
Thank you so much for calling, Susan. There is a poem that, Julie, you have written that I truly love. It's titled Bedtime Blessing.
Well, it heads up. We found that this poetry anthology broke down into so many categories, and we tried to sort of be creative about them. And so I wrote this Bedtime Blessing as a sort of beginning to all the poems about, or lullabies about going to bed and so on.
And you should add that it really is a reflection of your value, your belief in putting children to bed with a good moment in their hearts.
It is important for me. I mean, it's also such a great joy for a parent to sit on the bed with your child and trace the pages with your finger and share it with them and feel the, well, hopefully the poem says part of it. It's called Bedtime Blessing. Bedtime, curling up, finding a poem or two, reading, snuggling down, sharing the wonder with you. Listen, ponder, feel the release, imagine, wonder, surrender to peace. Everything warm and cozy as you drift towards dreamland. Wake the next day with grace in your heart and hold the world in your hand.
That is just so lovely. Just so lovely. And makes me wish that every child in the world had an opportunity to hear a parent read that poem before bedtime. Just
you,
perfectly
Diane.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Well,
it does wonders for mums as well as
yes,
for children.
Yes, of course. I want to thank you both so much for being with me.
Thank you for helping us share, for sharing our passion with us.
It's Julie Andrews' collection of poems, songs, and lullabies, selected by Julie Andrews and her daughter Emma Walton Hamilton, with gorgeous paintings by James McMullen. I hope to see you both again before long.
We would love
you,
it.
Diane.
Thank you.
Thank
love
you
to both of you.
Having us.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.